Chapter 45. Melodrin. Somroth recognized that another army might have mutinied over its sparse rations. But due to the years of famine, Oro protectors had become almost inured to hunger, and from childhood they had been trained in unquestioning obedience. The coterie of priests kept them on a tight rein of devotion, and their military discipline kept them dutiful. Besides, a mutiny wouldn't produce food, it would just leave them in disarray on the steppes. The only hope of filling their stomachs lay in moving forward. After 3 moons of hard sloughing, with their belts tightening every day, General Somroth led his still formidable army to the western edge of the Causeway of Stones. While his men pitched camp, he and his staff officers, Fourth Flamers and above, spurred their aurochs on to examine the course ahead. The causeway spanned the ocean from Melodrin to the Free States. No one knew who had built it or how. A series of massive boulders had been laid end to end from one landmass to the other. Somroth couldn't even imagine how men could have moved these stones into place. Each spanned at least 6 paces in length. They didn't form a smooth roadway. The boulders jutted jaggedly askew. Most boasted slippery pools and lichens. Sometimes a gap, large or small, yawned in between rocks. Certainly no one could ever use the causeway for wagons or trade goods.
"We'll have to leave the carts behind," a sixth flamer growled.
"Well, they're nearly empty anyway," said the officer who Somroth surmised might be his supply commander. "Tents, solar casks, medical supplies. Your men have been using them to carry their battle armor, though. They'll have to grab their gear."
"Going to be a mess getting the right pieces back to the right men," a fifth flamer sniped. "They should never have stored them on the wagons."
"They are too weak to march with all that metal. And it hasn't been necessary. The Mellies haven't struck many times in the last weeks," retorted the sixth flamer.
"Men with all their own set of armor, good fitting armor, will live through the coming battle. Those without won't," said a fifth flamer sourly. "You weren't strict enough about discipline, and now look at the trouble you've allowed."
Somroth didn't listen to their dispute. He eyed the route ahead. He would wager that Mellies, so lithe and coordinated, managed to cross when the need arose. He was not confident about protectors. It should be just possible for a soldier to walk or jump from one rock to the next. Pulling your stinking aurochs behind you would make it trickier. Seaweed markings showed that even in high tide, the rocks stayed above the surface. If you slipped off, of course, you would get smashed into the rocks by the fierce waves. Everyone should expect to get wet from the spray of the surf. But if the protectors were fearless and careful, the general guessed he would get 90% across alive. At least 80%. He'd lost 2,600 soldiers at the mouth of the mountains. Harrying, illness and starvation had reaped another 1,000 or so. He might lose another 3,000 here, especially since none of his men could swim. But if he could invade with close to 13,000... What awaited them on the other side worried him. If the Free Staters had an ounce of strategic sense, they would have blocked the causeway or set up an ambush to pick them off one by one as they crossed. His tactics would be useless on this slippery jetty. A child's breath could make his soldiers lose their balance.
"We'll let the men rest this afternoon and tonight," Somroth declared. "Feed them as best you can. Sixth Flamer, you will bring the second half of the troops tomorrow so as to cross in daylight."
"Sir, would you allow me the honor of leading the vanguard?" asked an ambitious Fifth Flamer.
Somroth found his eagerness annoying.
"Your platoon will need to carry the shields. Are your men strong enough?"
The fifth flamer turned to other officers.
"If we're going first and burdened with shields, you'll have to pull our aurochs."
The fellow officers assented with little grace. The next morning was drizzly. just to add to the overall danger and discomfort, but his supply teams had scavenged seaweed and mollusks to cook up a nourishing, if odd-tasting, fast break. Somroth couldn't restrain himself from a second portion, though he knew he was running the risk of making himself sick. Some priests had been out on the foot of the causeway, blessing the rocks, entreating Posar to look favourably on their venture. They sacrificed an ailing aurochs and burned it as an offering. The vanguard set off, awkwardly carrying the shield plates. Brushing the priests aside, Somroth rode to the first rock, dismounted, and, holding the reins in his left hand, climbed out to the initial slick stone, conscious that thousands of soldiers observed him. Somroth slipped on the fourth stone, grazing his knee. On the seventh, his aurochs fell heavily and he had to use all his strength, grabbing it by the neck to keep it from sliding over into the drink. By the 20th, he had to stop counting because fatigue had already taken its toll. He refused to look backward towards stable ground. Behind him, he heard occasional shouts as men or animals slipped into the sea. After a fourth flamer reported that two men fell in trying to retrieve a comrade, he issued an order forbidding any rescue attempts. His men followed him. With practice, Somroth got a little better at judging the jumps from one rock to the next, and at seeing which areas of the boulders offered the best purchase. His son-of-a-slut aurochs learned nothing from experience. If it hadn't been carrying his armour, his greatsword and his letters from Zia, he would have gladly let the sea swallow it. The hours passed in this dangerous exertion. Daring a glance over his shoulder, he saw an extensive contingent of his men keeping up, but in the distance the line became disorderly and broken. Soldiers who hung back would be caught on the rocks in the dark. As treacherous as the causeway might be in the daytime, darkness would mean death for sure. As daylight waned, he strained to see. The vanguard had nearly reached the far end of the causeway. Somroth scanned the flat ground ahead and then the trees and hillocks topped with the sun's sinking rays. He saw no fortifications, no lines of cavalry. But just at that moment, a whir of arrows from the nearest tree cover took down the cocky fifth flamer who led his troops. Protectors shouted and fumbled to raise the shield plates they had lugged. The heavy shields overbalanced some of the men on the slippery rocks. Somroth saw a dozen fall into the water. But two squads made it off the causeway and onto dry earth. Stoutly making a wall with their shields, the men, exhausted though they must have been, charged the tree line. Some arrows struck their feet and they tripped. Protectors behind filled in the shield wall. More Oro soldiers made it to firm soil. Now, hundreds bunched behind the metal plates, raising their battle cries with passionate voices. In a short time, no more arrows flew out from the tree cover. The Free State's archers had either met their deaths on Oro pikes and swords, or turned and fled. Somroth smiled with satisfaction and bounded over the last boulders as nimbly as a mountain goat.